Come, spellweavers, reavers, rogues, and men-at-arms, and answer the call of adventure. Pick up your sword, your axe, your spellbook, your bow, your rulebook, and your dice, and join the forces of good in their eternal fight against vile monsters, conspiring min-maxers, horny bards, and blood-soaked murder hobos. Discover the treasure trove of role-playing games here on Rollin' Bones. My name is Ryan Howard, and I shall be your guide. Good evening, boneheads, and welcome to Rollin' Bones with Ryan Howard, where we are making old school young again. I'm your host and king of the boneheads, Ryan Howard, and thank you once again for joining me here tonight. Before we get into tonight's episode, I want to really, you know, dive right in because I'm actually pretty excited about this one. I'm excited about every Rollin' Bones, but this one in particular, I've really been looking forward to because a lot of us wonder what the future of RPGs is going to be like, you know, once, you know, we're all dead and gone, I suppose. But, you know, tonight we're going to take a glimpse at what the next generation of gamers is actually going to bring to the table. And I'm really excited for that conversation. But before then, remember, social media, you can find me on all these platforms down here, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitch. I am still doing threads every day on various RPG topics. This week is all dedicated to arms and armor in role-playing games. So if you're interested in those things, those will be the threads for you. And also remember to like, share, and subscribe because that is how people discover Rollin' Bones. And you guys want more people to hear and see this, right? I know I do. Maybe it's just me. I don't know. But anyway, you know, tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell your mailman, tell your game master and your players. Rollin' Bones with Ryan Howard is where we make old school young again. All right. So with that in mind, let's go ahead and get into tonight's episode. I will go ahead and bring our guests on the stream. Say hello to Noah and Zane and also Scott, a.k.a. Orcus Dorcas. You guys have seen him on the show. You know him. You love him. And these are his son and his son's friend. They are involved in a D&D club in their high school. And, you know, I just want to talk to them all about the aspects of gaming that they love. So, guys, welcome to Rollin' Bones.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having us, or thanks for having me back and having us on, Ryan. We appreciate it. And for those currently watching, know we're huddled around a little webcam like it's a Yule log on Christmas. So if we all out of frame at all, just it's not on us. It's just we're as prepared and professional as we are on my YouTube channel, which is unprofessional.
So no gator this time though.
Yeah, no gator this time.
You're getting Zane the human, not Zane the gator.
Yep. Zane the gator is anamorphs. I don't know how to make that into a verb. You turn into a human.
Yeah, I think it worked fine. Yeah.
And I can go find the gator pup and just put it on my hand and a bow, but I don't feel like doing that.
You just fuse them.
I'm not doing that. Yeah. Zane the human. That's it. That's all you get.
This way your hand doesn't get sweaty. So,
right.
Yeah. No, it's still going to get sweaty. I have to hold a mic by myself.
Well, fair enough.
Wear deodorant next time.
On my hands?
No, just that's why you're over there. Anyways, so sorry, Ryan. We will take up this entire show with this stupid banter. So
we will banter. Banter is always appreciated. Anyway, so you know, Noah and Zane, we're going to begin at the beginning here. How did you guys get into playing role playing games?
This old fart.
I got into D&D because one of my friends in elementary school introduced it to me during, I think it was his sister's softball game. We were just like sitting at the park. And he gave me a character sheet, and I thought it was interesting and just went on after that. And I showed it to Zane.
No, I didn't get shown a character sheet. No,
I didn't show the character sheet to Zane. I showed D&D stuff to Zane.
And I just thought, hey, that's cool. I'll play it.
Yeah. So do you remember what I said when you asked me, you know, have you ever played D&D?
No.
I mean, I may have said this on the last cast, but, you know, when Noah said, oh, hey, I was on the bench, you know, making a D&D character, and it literally was like, son, let's take a walk.
Is it like the scene from Malcolm in the Middle where the dad leans in and it goes black?
It literally was straight to Amazon and literally buying everything that I could. So yes, mm-hmm. so that's how it was. So, but how about you, Zane? We didn't hear you. How did you get into it?
I got into D&D because Noah mentioned it, and then Noah and some other friends started playing it, and I tagged along after like the third session. And in my first session of D&D ever, it was clustered. Let's see. My character broke his toe trying to kick down a door. Every time it was dark, I would say my character would use his dark vision. He was a tiefling, so it was always an 8. And just a bunch of like general learning stuff in D&D. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Now, in the time that you guys have been playing role-playing games, what have been some of your fondest memories of playing them with your friends?
Honestly, probably, like, it as a whole is really, like, fun. There's, like, some parts I remember because they were funny. Like, I can't really name them off the top of my head because there's a lot. It's hard to remember, like, stuff like that. But yeah, mostly just it as a whole and getting introduced to other role-playing games besides D&D.
I'd say, like, the first one that comes to my mind of, like, great RPG moments was the Nat 20 gong, where in one D&D group I'm in, the first Nat 20, like, one of the first rolls in the entire campaign was my 7-foot-tall Warforged walking on stage to hit a gong, and I got a Nat 20 with it.
Nice. Just like one of those like end of the orchestra moments of like just bang the gong and you apparently did it really well. Is that kind
no,
of
no, not end of orchestra. I was in the middle of a bar.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you know what? I think I can just to kind of help Noah out. Do you recall the moment when I ran both a DCC funnel for your friends for your first time and then did a player versus player level 20 for your birthday? So do you remember how did you wipe the floor clean with everybody on that one?
Oh my God, the 3 weeks of planning you spent?
It wasn't 3 weeks of planning.
It was 1 week.
My planning was casting the spell Ravenous Void, which I did, and it worked.
It worked very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, this was an interesting session. So we played it at the Friends Game Store, and we introduced a lot of his friends to Dungeon Crawl Classics for the first time, and they absolutely loved it. This was a lot of their first introduction outside of 5th edition. Mm-hmm. But the big thing was that they've been wanting to do is, you know, With Dungeons and Dragons, whether it be whatever edition, you know, getting to whatever the highest level is usually a challenge if you do it, you know, by the book. But you sometimes just want to experience to see what it's like. So everyone created a level 20 character, and then we just had this player versus player session. It was essentially them against Vecna.
There is the Iron Hand of Vecna in the
which area. I got.
Oh, that's right. We set up kind of a Hunger Games session, so they had to fight mm-hmm. each other to get the Iron Hand and also the head of Vecna.
The head of Vecna that did nothing.
And so they fought each other. And granted, they do say there really wasn't any planning involved, but within the first 3 or 4 rounds, you know, my son, who says he hadn't been planning, took down a level 20 Ranger.
Yeah.
What else?
Paladin.
Level 20 paladin
and almost killed the rogue
and almost killed level 20 rogue with like two or three spells. And it's like, so you've been planning? Oh no, it just happened naturally.
Right. Yeah. No, I've been getting texts from him for like a week.
So,
cause I joined sides with him and I built my character around speed. So while Noah did that, I just took the hand and eye of Vecna. It was great.
Oh,
right. Nice. All right, well, like I said before we went on the air, there's one more introductory question that I will ask you guys at the end of the show. But moving on from there, I want to talk a little bit about this kind of RPG group or club that you guys have formed at your school. So tell me, how did that come about? How did that come to life? And you know, just kind of tell me the story of that formation there.
The club had already been pre-established at our school for a couple of years, and we saw, Scott saw it, and he got us to join it.
Yeah, there was basically nobody before the year we joined it.
And then
like
the year
people
we...
80
people.
80 plus. Nice. Gotcha. Now, did you guys kind of lead that wave, or did you kind of come in at the same time as that wave?
We came in like a week before the major wave, because a lot of people joined because of Club Rush at our school.
Okay. Gotcha. Now, besides just like the event of Club Rush happening at your school, what else do you think kind of could you attribute to that rush of people coming in? Like, is there anything pop culture wise that, you know, you and your friends are into that's driving you towards D&D? What's kind of the thing that's really got this D&D fever kicked off in your school?
I know this year it was sparked because like Stranger Things season 4 came out right before the school year started. Mm-hmm. But last year, I have no idea. I think it was just people wanted to play D&D.
Yeah, and I think D&D has just become more widespread as a whole, like over the past few years.
Gotcha. Because I will tell you, first of all, there were not 80 kids in my graduating class. I graduated with 66 kids.
Oh, our graduating class is like 1,200 kids.
Yeah. Yeah. I went to a small private Christian school, and so, yeah, 66 kids was what we had.
How was the D&D club at that school?
There wasn't one. Not like, I mean, there weren't really any clubs at the school. It was like just no clubs at all.
Right.
Not even like a drama club or a glee club or anything like that. Like literally just nothing. But I mean, I don't even know who would have started one. I was the closest thing to a gamer that the school had. And I didn't even like, I didn't start playing role-playing games until I was 19. So I'm not even sure where like the drive would have come from at my school to set one up.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting group though. And they can probably divulge more with the current dynamic and demographic. But I mean, even with 80 kids, you know, it's not the prototypical, it's all 80 kids who are, you know, and I know this is an old stereotype. It's not a bunch of 80 kids who are a bunch of comic book or gaming nerd type things. You guys have, you know, football players, wrestlers, and stuff like that within the club.
It's while you're also mentioning the club, may I mention our current club fundraiser?
Sure.
These two know already. Our club is currently running a fundraiser by the end of the year to get $600 so we can get a pizza oven.
I love it.
Wow. Ryan, I must say, this was not passed by me.
I think it's funny that our club is trying to get a pizza. No, do you think it's not funny that we're trying to get a pizza oven?
No, I think that's I think that's fantastic. I don't care what club it was. I wish we had a pizza oven. I mean, I don't care if it was like the French club, you know, could have been a baguette oven. I don't care. Just if we had something, that'd be fine. But okay. Well, are you done stumping?
I do admire that you recognize, even though like my audience is not the biggest, that you are in front of people. So now is the time to ask for money. So, you know,
none of you old people can give us money. It's all in-person donations.
Okay.
Oh, well, sorry. I mean, to be fair,
give Scott money, he'll give it to us.
Oh yeah. Okay. I mean, yeah, all joking aside, if anyone wants to, you know, assist in getting a pizza club to the, you know, to the high school D&D club, I can get information out to Ryan and we can provide it to you later. So, But no, your club, I mean, your current dynamic. I mean, it's, you know, it's all ages. It's, you know, all social circles, boys, girls, and pretty much everything, right? I mean, your club president is currently 17-year-old senior. You know, she's club president's a girl. Their DMs are, you know, between run the gamut, you know, boys, girls, and, you know, and just it's amazing because even the minor D&D aspect that existed when I was in high school back in 1864, it's not that there wasn't any diversity between guys and girls. It's just it was an outlier, outcast club. Mm. You know, this particular club, this high school is, you know, right in center and accepted universally. And I think that's tremendous that's how it is at their school now.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Crafty makes a good point here. We did have a D&D club at my school. It was Deacons and Devotions. So.
Oh, Matt's here.
Yeah,
Crafty. He's been here for a while. The second he was on, he started complaining there's no gator.
Matt's the number one fan of the gator.
Yeah, yeah. No, we all love seeing the gator.
I also want to say welcome to Pepe Clifton, a.k.a. Aggie Gyrax, who I encountered on Twitter this week. Thank you for stopping by. Now, getting into a little bit more about how you guys play the game, what does the play at the tables in your group look like? Like, how are you guys interfacing with the game, to put it that way?
In the club, the games that usually go on, like some of them are split between mainly combat focus, while a lot of the other ones are more story based.
Yeah, to get more in depth than that, because I run a game for the club. We had to make a slideshow presentation for every game, for like every different campaign. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we would list is the combat to roleplay ratio, depending, like, you know, and that depended on how much you wanted to play combat or how much you wanted to roleplay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Now, are you guys using a lot of VTTs? Are you using, like, you know, hand-drawn maps? What's kind of the, I don't know, the presentation when you run these games? Like, are you using laptops at all? What's, you know,
yeah, what's most of us use our laptops for like background information, but we got like $3,000 worth of stuff donated to our club from a game store.
The current game I'm in the club, the DM did make a hand-drawn map as well as like complete world background and lore and stuff.
Oh, nice.
We have like a bunch of minis and like player maps to use that were donated to us.
And you guys still primarily you're utilizing, you know, paper character sheets, pencils, physical dice. And I think the one of the big questions is, you know, and I'll lay this one out. Are you guys making and homebrewing your own adventures, or are you playing published adventures?
It's entirely homebrew adventures and campaigns and stuff like that.
There's no actual just base 5e campaign at our club right now. Almost everything. Yeah, no, everything is a tinge of homebrew.
Gotcha. Now, is everything are a lot of things being run on like a base of 5e, or are you guys using some other systems around 5e as well? Like, are you running any classic AD&D, Dungeon Crawl Classics? You know, what all do you have going on in the club right now?
All games aside from one are running off of the 5e template. There is one game, my campaign, where we're playing Morkborg.
Oh, nice. How are your players enjoying both kind of just the gameplay and the aesthetic of Morkborg?
My players are having so much fun in Morkborg because if something sounds funny or cool, I'm letting them do it.
Okay.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm in this campaign, and I just really like Morkborg because of its simple gameplay, and I love the atmosphere for it. Like, I really like the dark fantasy atmosphere of Morkborg.
I like the fact that Morkborg is, like, mostly player side, because that makes my job as DM so much easier, because I'm a very unprepared and loose and run with the kind of DM. So the less I have to do, the better.
Mm-hmm. An unprepared DM?
Oh, shut up. You're no better.
Inconceivable. So, I mean, I to kind of tack on to Brian's question, though, but you mentioned to me before that, yes, a lot of your games are 5e based, but you do. I know there's other games that you've interjected other aspects into the 5e game. It's not strictly rules as written, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they've come home with stories of, like, you know, they recently discovered 3.5, and they may, you know, find something in there, and they'll try to incorporate that into the 5e game. Cyberpunk or anything like that. So you guys are constantly working with and playing with different rule sets, but still using 5e as a foundation, but, you know, just adding stuff to it, adding color to it, adding flair to it, so to speak, just to keep it interesting, which, you know, again, for that type of club, it kind of goes against the, I would say, somewhat of the norm, and you guys are aware of this. It's not just, you know, we play WotC's 5e, that's it. But 5e is kind of like your canvas, and you guys just use it to, you know, mold into whatever you want. So
the other campaign I'm in is it's using a GM binder thing to like make it cyberpunk themed, and that's running really interestingly. And then I know other campaigns that are going on in our club are like, there's a Titanfall themed campaign, there's a Star Wars themed campaign, and then there's the one Noah's in, which is like almost entirely homebred.
Like mine's the most traditional D&D-y kind of. There's no like weird spin on it. It's not strict like 5e, it's its own world, but it's not crazy like cyberpunk in 5e.
Gotcha. Now, as far as the like aspects that you're pulling from other games, what is it that you guys have kind of borrowed from these other games that have made their way into your 5e homebrews?
I'll let Noah go for that because I don't really do a lot of homebrew stuff.
All right.
In the club, I think it's mostly, I don't really know what goes on with the other DMs because I don't play in the games, but in the one that Zane's in, there's a lot of homebrew stuff for the Cyberpunk one. For me, whenever I try and DM myself, I almost completely homebrew all of it. Mm-hmm. Like I do a loose base off either something like 5e or the like Morkborg, Cyberpunk Red, just a base, and then add stuff to it like like actual set armor instead of just AC, wounds.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Yes. Like actual like traits and stuff.
Yeah, it's okay. You. It's almost like rather than taking stuff from games, you know, said games and interjecting into it, he'll take Cyberpunk, Morkborg, D&D, whatever the case may be, and he will make changes of his own volition, of his own ideas, you know, and granted it may mirror other aspects, but he will sit down. I mean, at least my understanding is you've sat down and he'll just create stuff. And use mechanics from another particular any sort of game and just kind of like, you know, pigeonhole it into whatever it is he's running. So it's an interesting take when I've read some of your notes, the ones that you allow me to read. but no, it's you can see where it's coming from, but it's not like, hey, I took like the Gauss rifle from Cyberpunk and just put it into 5e. It's modified to the point where it will work, but just the general idea is coming from a source, but it's still, you know, completely of his own idea and creation, so to speak. So I hope I'm saying that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Now, Sequoia Wright in chat here makes a good point. Homebrew is the beginning of game design, which is a skill mindset with applications across many industries and isn't going anywhere anytime soon. So with that said, are you guys interested in like designing your own games at some point? Is that something that you've aspired to or even like started making attempts at?
I'll let you go first.
I don't really have like a goal to create video games or stuff like that, but I really want to like eventually create my own like role-playing system that's like entirely mine.
And like the game design aspect of it isn't really great with me because I'll overthink a lot of stuff. Noah, you can attest to this. Like when I try to turn Dragon's Dogma into D&D, that turned out horribly. But I can do good. I can't do game design, but I can do lore design. I can write stuff.
Yeah.
I like writing.
It sounds to me, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong here, it sounds to me like between the two of you, you've got Noah, who's very kind of focused on the mechanical aspects of how do we make this work on the tabletop so that, you know, every single time we run this, it works. And then Zane, your skill set lies more in the lore and background and kind of fleshing out the fluff of the world in that, you know, like this is the world that you guys will be exploring. Here are the kinds of characters that you can run into. So it sounds like between the two of you, you guys have a pretty good team for creating an RPG of your own someday.
Yeah. Now, if we can only get Derek to, you know, get involved, that's where you throw the wrench in.
Yeah, they have a floating partner, Derek, who's kind of like the core three who are constantly doing these design things and changes and game tests and whatnot. But Whereas Zane's the lore and Noah's like the analytical aspect.
Derek's has really good like art direction. Yeah. Like he is really good at like creating ideas and concepts that just look cool.
And he's also the one that's gonna interject the really weird stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. When he makes a character in a game, it's never like one of those preset races. It's always like a weird custom like character that adds his own stuff because he like wants to make each character fully unique.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like the garden gnome.
Yeah, and in the games that he's playing in mine, he made a fae creature that is made out of porcelain. That looks like a Pikmin.
Okay.
Yeah.
Trying to get sued there, buddy.
He's the one I made mention on Twitter of Noah's friends where I was running a cyberpunk game for him, and he's a netrunner, but he put all his skills into dance.
He was the dancing netrunner. But nice. then we went through a session with him and he realized his character was built horribly. Yeah, so he realized
I probably shouldn't put this many points into dance and contortionists.
And that ruined my entire, 3-hour creation of an entire dance centric scenario for them. So thanks a lot.
Yeah, you're welcome.
But
I just like to imagine that instead of a deck, you have like one of those DDR pads. So you just like spread it out in the back of a van and you're just like, do.
Great. Okay. There you go. Now I'm going to have to deal with the DDR deck because they're going to tell them. So
oh, I got my phone right here. I'll text Eric right now.
Yeah. But
somebody turn on Blue Dabba D.
Right. So, but no, I thank you for that compliment, Ryan. As a father, I look forward to their burgeoning career in 20 years from now when they both sue each other over ownership of the gaming company.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, but I'm sure you are.
That'll become after the success. So.
I just hope this episode gets played in a deposition.
Yeah. Also, I see Matt asked about the D&D Direct today. I didn't watch it. At all. I think Noah realized there wasn't even one.
I didn't even know there was one.
No. I don't know what a D&D Direct is, so.
Well, so they've been doing these, it's pretty similar to what Nintendo is doing. In fact, it's the same name, Nintendo Direct, D&D Direct, but it's these little 15 to 30 minute drops of content on YouTube where they're outlining what one D&D is going to be like, and I think this most recent one was focused on their new VTT, which if you guys have any, do you have any opinions on this kind of computer gamification of D&D that's happening with this new virtual tabletop that WotC's trying to roll out?
What's a VTT?
Virtual tabletop.
That answers your question.
Yeah.
honestly, I prefer like physical table and stuff. It feels like it'd be easier. I'd be able to pay attention easier if it was like physical. If you're playing it like virtually, it's just a video game. Like there's no appeal for like the tabletop thing. If you have like a virtual map with virtual enemies, it's just like a turn-based RPG instead of a TTRPG.
See, the aspect, like if it's a human DM and human players, that's fine. But the problem is if you get into like an AI DM, that takes the fun out of D&D. Because without a human DM, you don't get stuff like your skeleton gangster, Bones Malones. he cries as he witnesses the birth of his daughter or something like
that. Yeah, no AI generated D&D campaign.
Comes up with like it takes human creativity to make D&D what it is.
Yeah. Now here's kind of an interesting question for you guys, because I grew up with video games. You guys grew up with video games. Scott,
not so. Oh, yeah. Much. No, I did.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. No, I grew up with video games too. Yeah.
No, I thought you grew up with like the game they played in Continental Times, like the stick and the hoop.
Ryan, can you mute the mic and the screen turns black for just 2 minutes, please?
Hey, you yourself said you went to school in 1864, buddy.
Yeah, let me remind you, your mom told me when you're at this house, you are my child, so I get to do what I want.
No, she did not.
I'm sure she won't have an issue with it.
Hmm.
No. So anyways, you were going on, Ryan. Sorry.
Yeah, but you guys grew up with, like video games. Let me back up here a second. The video games that you guys grew up with were what I consider to be super advanced. I was like, my mind was blown the first time I saw someone play Sly Cooper on the PS2. Okay. those are like the video games that were around when you guys were born and when you were first learning to play video games. I played on an N64. Scott, I'm not sure when, like what your first system was.
My very first system that I owned was a ColecoVision.
Gotcha.
And then real quick, Matt might know this one since he's in the crowd too. I forget what it was called, but it was a VCR based VHS digital light gun game.
Gotcha.
But carry on.
But I say this to say that you guys have seen video games turn into something spectacular. I mean, in your lifetime, video games have gone from what you see on like a PlayStation 2 all the way up to like Red Dead Redemption 2 or Witcher 3, some of the like best games of all time. I've seen that evolution go all the way back from like Super Mario 64 forward. Video games are their own separate thing. And I think for the generation before mine, video games and role-playing were so kind of separate from each other that the idea of a future where you could merge the two together seemed like fantastic to them. You guys have seen some of the most advanced video games that kind of the world has ever known. And it sounds like you're more interested in keeping that in its own category and keeping role-playing games as its own category. Would you say that's true? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah.
I think I want to keep like tabletop role-playing games separate from video games, but like role-playing video games, that's...
Role-playing games in general, I think, are fine as video games, but TTRPGs should be TTRPGs.
They shouldn't be converted to video games because it doesn't work sometimes and it just turns into like worse Final Fantasy.
Yeah, it just gets boring. Because I feel like you'd be more limited too if you did it like virtually, because you wouldn't have as much flexibility. Like you wouldn't be able to say, I want to go climb this wall and dig a hole in it with an ice pick. You'd be pretty limited to like just a virtual map with virtual rules and virtual everything.
Yeah, because when you get into like the game with the tabletop, again, that removes like the human DM from it, and instead it puts the code limits, which takes some of the human creativity out of it, so you can't break it. I mean, unless you're a speedrunner, you still absolutely destroy the game by its source code.
Speedrunning D&D.
Yeah, speedrunning D&D, baby. There's this exploit where I'll kill 2 million boars and I'll hit level 20 in a day.
I mean, that's not too dissimilar from the old third edition human ballista where you line up a bunch of peasants.
I know the peasant railgun, but the human
The peasant railgun, yeah. The
peasant railgun.
That's what I was talking about. There's been a couple different names for it, but the, you know, passing a spear is a free action. Yeah. Oh. But. Yeah.
Go on, sir.
Anyway, my generation has seen, like, again, video game graphics become as close to real life as they possibly can. And it seems like you guys have kind of figured out that, at the expense of me sounding like someone's parent, there's no graphics that can replicate the image that you can come up with in your imagination. And so it's cool to me that you guys see the value in that. And, you know, because, again, people my age, I don't think value the power of imagination. And I'm not, who said old?
See,
I am not 30.
Yeah, see?
Yeah, you're 31.
I'm 27.
And we were never welcome back again.
Zane was never welcome. Right, Zane the human was.
Let him finish his thought.
But it, is that, would you guys agree with what I said there, that like it's important to have these avenues where we can conjure these images ourselves rather than having them presented to us?
Yeah, because the human imagination, just nothing can be like what you can come up with in your head. Also, Matt, again, answering your question, archaic, decrepit, other large fancy vocabulary words for really old.
Eldritch.
Eldritch. Wow. How do I have the power to boot Matt? Because he's leading the kids on. So, I mean, I'd like to just point out something in chat, and this is from Pepe Clifton and his defense of VTTs. So I think what primarily the boys were primarily focusing on is, you know, you had mentioned earlier the the coming Dungeons and Dragons virtual tabletop, which is a kind of like isometric type 3D centric map or dungeon where it seems like as pretty as it's going to be, you are going to lose a lot of the freedom, like they said, because you are stuck within the design aspects of this 3D isometric world that they're providing to you. And you're going to lose a lot of the ability to not just role play, but also improvise that normally happens at the table. But whereas things like Foundry, you know, Roll20 and the others, they're not quite as restrictive because they're more of just like a pretty dice rolling machine. Yeah. You know, they're going to allow you to roll dice. You're going to allow you to put down a map like you would at the table, but you're still communicating verbally and you're not as constrictive as it seems like that this might be the case when this WotC virtual tabletop comes out. Because, you know, no denying it, it's very pretty. It looks like it's a very beautiful 3D Dungeons and Dragons video game. And it would be something that I wouldn't mind playing on the PlayStation or my computer, but I would never want to run a campaign or something on that thing because it just seems too much effort. I mean, you're more focusing on all the moving parts and all the aspects of it, not necessarily the game. And I think that's what some people feel happens when you get in these more detailed virtual tabletops. You're more focused on the, you know, the flair and the splash of it, and you lose focus of the game itself and the players. So.
Yep. Yeah. And the other aspect that I don't like about the coming VTT apocalypse is, in a traditional game, you say, I want my character to have a blue cloak. And the GM goes, cool, you have a blue cloak. Mm-hmm. In WotC's VTT, you're going to say, I want a blue cloak. And they'll go, oh, do you? That'll be $2.99, please.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yay. We love capitalizing. That's the right word, right?
No, monetization.
Monetization.
Yeah.
You want a blue cloak? Oh, pay $3 for it, man.
You have to buy premium in order to get the special colors.
If you buy the cloak pack for $10.99, you'll get 80 colors of cloaks for a deal.
Only $20.99 a month.
Or you can pay $40 for the cloak loot box and hope you get the blue one.
Yep.
Yeah, no, it's and you know, I kind of brought this point up in our last interview. You know, these kids grew up with video games, but they were the prime generation for all of the loot box shenanigans and monetization that went on with a lot of the video games the past couple of years. And, you know, I think it goes without saying, you guys hated it, didn't want to participate in it. It really, you know, it really ticked them off. Like, for a classic example is when they started getting into Star Wars Battlegrounds.
Battlefront?
Oh, Battlefront.
No, that was different for me because I got into Battlefront at the end of its lifespan, so it was a completely different game from when Noah and Chesney got into it.
But when Noah got into it,
it was you had to buy everything.
Yeah. And it was just like, wait, we just spent $80 of my allowance money on this game, and now I don't have everything? That doesn't make any sense.
But when I got the game, everything was already there for
eventually
you.
Eventually, later on, they made pretty much everything free, but when it first started, it was horrible.
Yeah. That's what I heard. So I didn't get it for a while.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, but now they're trying to do that with the virtual they're proposing it. It's not officially out yet, but that's what they're proposing.
D&D already has enough microtransactions. You know, there's dice.
Yeah.
Minis. Right. That's all you need.
There's me charging you guys whenever you play a game with me.
No, wait, there's what? Not.
Mute that.
Now, kind of switching gears here a little bit. One of the things that Crafty and Scott told me about you guys before I invited you on the show is that you play D&D, but you've also explored other systems. And you guys have mentioned, Cyberpunk Red and, you know, several other games. So I'll go ahead and put Crafty's question here from earlier. How did you guys get introduced to other games? And then how did you introduce your friends to these game, these non-D&D and even non-fantasy games?
So getting introduced to non-D&D games, that was just Scott being like, hey guys, do you want to try something that's not D&D? And we're like, sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Introducing it to people at school, I just said, hey, I'm going to run Morkborg. Who wants to join? And they were like, what's Morkborg? I was like, it's fun. And they were like, cool.
And people joined and liked it.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
The easy aspects of being young and not cynical. You know, when it just someone can just say, you want to try this out? And you're like, sure, let's do it. Because there are baked in prejudices and other things that we've accrued over the years with in games don't exist. And yeah, and like Zane had mentioned, them and their friends are my guinea pigs. For the past maybe 3 years now, it's like if I get a new game and I want to maybe try it out before I go play it with my friends or want to play with them, it's literally sit down, you know, obviously I propose it to them.
To double it down more, Noah's the test dummy. I mean, he gets sat down for like 4 hours and has to read the whole rule book and make a character.
But one thing I will add to that though, is it used to be me having to come to them and either convince them to play a game or make sure it's something they're interested in. But what's happening now is they're coming to me with games and say, hey, what's this game about? Can we play it? So they're coming to me to try out new games, which is
really gotcha. Gotcha. Now, Crafty, this is a joke that Crafty made, obviously, but I do have to ask you guys, based on this, have you ever at any point while you were playing, you know, just at any point in your RPG career, felt any sort of loyalty to D&D specifically?
No. God, no.
Okay.
I don't have any loyalty to
no loyal, any no brand game loyalty
or any brand.
Good.
D&D by itself is kind of boring. Let's be honest here.
Yeah. Because this is something, again, this is something that people my age do a lot. We latch on to brand names, and WotC is just one of them. You know, you see the Marvel obsessed people, the people that have like a wall full of Funko Pops. Those are the kind of people who will say 5e and 5e only. And if you try to bring any other game to my table, I will burn this house down.
Yeah, no, not us.
Good.
Yeah, no, I don't. I mean, you guys never, I mean, even in the general introduction, it was never, I mean, none of you ever watched any of the, you're not on social media in regards to tabletop role-playing games. You guys have never watched a Critical Role or any of the online Let's Plays or apps. So they're not being influenced by a lot of these things. All of your guys' kind of definition of what it is kind of how it was back in the old day, where it's just coming from the table. They're not being influenced by cynical people or other people, or they're not being influenced by, hey, this is, have you watched episode 1 through 800 of this Let's Play? It's just coming naturally and organically, which I think is another great thing. And if anything within my power to kind of keep it that way, and this is a father thing. I mean, you'll eventually get there when you're talking to older. The longer you can keep the cynicism from seeping in, the better.
Yep. Now, this next question is going to be a little esoteric, so just kind of bear with me here. When it comes to having opportunities to get together in person with friends, do you guys feel like you have a lot of those opportunities, or do you feel like, you know, there aren't as many as you would like?
Oh, I have the perfect amount of opportunities. I'm given like an opportunity every week to come, you know, hang out with my friends and play D&D.
Gotcha.
You know, better luck than normal. We usually get together almost every week.
Yeah, we have a lot of opportunities to play D&D. There's usually no, you cannot play D&D for a while. It's always, or not D&D, but like tabletop RPGs in general. There's always a chance every once in a while.
Now, do you guys feel like that game time that you get is kind of your major time to connect with your friends? Is that how it kind of ends up based on your schedule?
It's less like connecting with friends and more just getting together and
having fun.
Yeah, having fun. Because we connect with our friends in other ways too. Like we talk to them pretty much every day and over text and stuff.
Yep.
That's cool. Yeah. And also, and again, this is reflecting back, you know, when I was younger, it's an opportunity to get away from your parents.
Not for him.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, well, you play here too when that happens, but when they play with their friends, yeah, it's, they kind of get to let their hair down and be themselves. So.
Are you saying I don't be myself when I'm here?
Zane, you cannot not be yourself. Okay, you're the exception to the rule, so it's fine. We've accepted that long ago when you were four.
You didn't know me when I was four.
Five. Okay, so there you go. But
I didn't go to your house when I was like six, though.
You weren't. Yeah, not for lack of trying. Yeah, so I'm sorry. I keep talking over you guys. But
now, Zane, you don't also have to just be yourself. You could also be Walter White if you want.
pre-stream chat inside joke there for the watchers. So very funny.
I haven't played a Walter White character yet.
Okay. Let's see if I can
ask about the popcorners.
Go on. Does it have to do with the games?
No.
Okay, then we'll save that for, like, you know,
the later. Grand finale.
Yeah. The grand finale of me pretending to be Walter White. Nothing will ever beat the 2 a.m. Walter White and Jesse conversation we had about dinosaurs.
Nice. Just trying to think of a way I can prompt you here. Should I be like, you know, yo, Mr. White, what sneak attack damage do I get at sixth level?
You get 46 damage at sixth level, Jesse. Is that even right? I've never played a rogue.
That might be right. I have no idea.
Well, let me can't. Check.
It might actually be right.
Oh.
We're background checking rogue. That's the wrong class.
You do know you're live, right?
I know. That's why I'm doing this.
This is how it works.
It's all right.
I was wrong. It's 3d6 damage. Jesse, you get 3d6 damage at 6 level with a sneak attack. How do you want to do this? Mr. White, I sneak up behind him and stab him in the kidney, Mr. White. Yo. And as I do it, I say, yo.
I think we could all just step away, Ryan, and just put Zane in the center camera if we need to.
We probably could. Zane, do you want your own show?
What?
I said, do you want your own show?
No!
Oh, excellent.
So, I have kind of an anecdote that I pulled from Twitter. I don't remember who tweeted this. I don't remember where it came from. So, if the person who tweeted this out is watching... Let me know in chat. I'm
going to preemptively blame Matt.
No, it's not Matt.
It's not. It wasn't Crafty. He didn't do this. But they were talking about their daughter, who I think is right around you guys' age, approaching her role-playing group. It's a similar situation to what you guys have, a role-playing group in a school, and saying, hey, guys, my dad introduced me to these kind of like old-school game ideas. It was a lot of bringing in stuff from Advanced Dungeons and Dragons and a little bit of like AD&D second edition stuff. When she asked, hey, can we try this? The reaction was, that's boomer D&D. So two questions for you guys. One, what are your thoughts when you hear people talk about old school gaming? And two, how would you present, quote unquote, boomer D&D to your friends in a way that would not make them immediately go, no, we're not doing that old people crap?
The difference is, like, the major thing is they'd be interested in it because they'd be like, hey, old D&D, that sounds cool.
When I think of boomer D&D, old school D&D,
you think of Red Hat guy?
The first thing that comes to mind is like first edition and before. I don't really consider anything after that like super old or like ancient. But yeah, if presented the chance to play old school D&D, I probably would, because it sounds really interesting, because it's super different than modern D&D.
Yeah, I'd be super interested to play old D&D. It's, you know, like, oldest I've gone is 3.5, and I'd be interested to see like the differences between D&D eras, so I could like compare and contrast. But not 4e, none of that. we don't talk about that.
Not into minions.
Nothing wrong with 4E.
There's something wrong with it, I tell you.
Something wrong with you.
There's a lot wrong with me, man. That's why I'm on pills.
Oh. Yeah. No, we yeah, I mean, the and for those in chat, the boys have experienced 3.5. And again, it was on their own volition. It wasn't me trying to push it.
Noah's volition.
I mean, well, yeah, Noah. But I mean, you're always his tag along with his, you know, game interest. But Noah's just like, hey, can we run 3.5 sometime? Absolutely. We would love to show it. And they're currently in, you know, in the middle of a 3.5 adventure. And how are you guys liking that?
I really like it.
Yeah. I'm enjoying it. It's funny when Noah looked shocked when NyQuil instantly killed the rat with the bow.
You named a character NyQuil.
The combat is less squishy than 5e, which I do like. And I like how it goes in more into detail. Like the morph feats, the skills, so many morph feats. Reflexes, fortitude, instead of just you get a feat every 4 levels and it adds advantage to this check under a full moon.
Yeah, they're at least Noah, but because Zane kind of goes along for the ride, but Noah's in what I call his crunch phase.
Gotcha.
He's you know, the crunchier the better, like Cyberpunk 3.5, we're discovering Traveler. Mm-hmm. He just asked about Rune Quest, you know, which is its own special kind of crunch. So
yeah. One recommendation that I would have for you, if you're looking at games that have a little bit more complex mechanics to them, Savage Worlds is actually pretty fun if you haven't tried that yet.
We've done Deadlands, and we've only done Deadlands. But I'm interested in trying other Savage World games.
Yeah, we really like Deadlands.
Deadlands is fun. Once you get into the groove of it.
Now, I'm going to slide off camera for just one second because I'm going to grab something.
Okay.
But if you guys want to try, someone mentioned this in chat, I'll go ahead and pin this comment here. If you guys do want to try like a flavor of old school gaming, Old School Essentials is going to be where you're going to want to turn, because this takes basic expert D&D, the stuff that people were playing in the 70s and 80s, and it makes the books readable, essentially. Because they're a little hard to parse at times, but
I'll take a readable version of old school D&D. I read like the second edition Monster Manual, and that was
the first edition Monster Manual.
Oh, the one with the Irish deer.
The yes. Irish deer in D&D.
Yes, the vicious Irish deer.
No, it's not vicious. It's a fey creature.
Yeah, from the fey realm of Ireland.
But yeah, no, I mean, if you guys want to borrow my copy of Old School Essentials, you're welcome to it any time. So it's, as Ryan said, I would, even though I would rather give them like the rule cyclopedia.
Oh yeah, RC is great.
But if I don't want to scare them off immediately, because that I mean, granted, it's fantastic, but I mean, it can be a bit overwhelming if you're not used to that kind of old school inundation of information. OSC will ease them into it a lot better. So I think that's a fantastic recommendation.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, if you guys ever want to run Rule Cyclopedia, I've actually been looking into that a lot myself recently. One of the big selling points for me is this optional rule called Weapon Mastery. And what that does is it takes away kind of the classic critical hit mechanic. And it replaces it with these kind of different feats of like weapon prowess that you can do with certain weapons. So like with a long sword, you can behead someone when you roll a 20. And it also incorporates this idea that you have to train with your weapon to become better. So instead of just having bonuses that go up as you level, you have to go seek out a mentor who's going to teach you the next level of longsword fighting, and you have to go through the process of, you know, you pay this guy, you roll to see if you succeed at training, and if you succeed, you gain this new level of mastery, and you get these cool things that go along with it. So it's an interesting take on using your weapons, and it's also not just for the fighters. All characters in Rule Cyclopedia get at least a little bit of weapon mastery. So even like a wizard can learn how to use a sword.
Question. I was about to ask about wizards, right? Mm-hmm. Do they get weapon mastery for a spell book attack? Can they just beat people over the head with their book?
No.
This is the unrealistic bad game, 0 out of 10.
I mean, hey, you know, it's there for you to modify and make your own game anytime you want. So, but I mean, it needs to, you know, fall within range. But yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, Calstaff, don't look into the weapon mastery light.
It'll draw you in. It'll hypnotize you.
Oh, fantastic! Yeah, no, I mean, and Matt made the comment. Yeah, I've got kind of a ridiculously stupid library.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, it's,
what is it, like a quarter of your garage?
More.
If you guys more than welcome to check it out. Just say the word.
Can I look and see if you have Cthulhu Borg in there?
I don't have Cthulhu Borg. I told you that. I'm not paying $7 for a Cthulhu Borg based Morkborg game.
Why don't you want to get Cthulhu Borg?
I do want to get it if you want to pay for it.
I'm not paying for it. No one pay for it.
I'm not paying for anything.
And here we have the reason why so many people get stuck in just one RPG system, because at the end of the day, books cost money.
Right. Yes. I mean, I gladly pay $40 for another edition of OSC than $7 for Cthulhu Borg. And this is nothing against Cthulhu Borg. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, it's still $7 more than I think it might be. Anyways.
Now, are there any types of game that you guys have been wanting to play but haven't gotten the chance to, like, you know, a pirate game or superheroes, or, you know, are there any genres that you haven't explored yet that you're really looking forward to digging into with your friends someday?
Like recent era technology wise, like 20s to 2000s, but with fantasy aspects to it. I haven't seen a lot of that.
Yeah, okay. That's something I'd be wanting.
My friend Derek's been creating. He created the concept for a 1930s and 40s world with, like, the Earth supplies people with magical abilities that is evenly distributed through everyone. And as population grows, it slowly reduces.
I am going to drop a link here in the main chat for everyone to see. I'm also going to private message this to you. My friend Victor Gorchev makes a lot of content that is modern set, modern technology in a fantasy environment. So you're going to want to take a look at what Victor, what he's published.
Excellent.
He's got a book out called Simple Modernity, which takes old school rules and applies it to like modern settings. And then he also has the Modern Adventurer's Guide to Guns and Gear, which is more geared towards 5th edition.
Definitely gonna check that out for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Vic's a good guy. I'm surprised he's not here right now.
Yeah. Any other genres though, besides, like, what I think the genre technically what it's kind of called is almost like an urban fantasy type thing. But what about any other genres you guys might be interested in? You think some things I know some things that you haven't tried out, like there's supers, like superheroes.
That'd be cool.
I mean, you've what else? I think there's you know, things like what about like wuxia or, you know, martial arts type things or things that, you know, in that regard.
I think that's like too specific to base an entire system around.
Oh.
Just entirely.
I mean, there's a few people that will disagree with you about that.
It sounds cool, but an entire role playing system around martial arts.
If there are any Legend of the Five Rings fans in chat, just put your katanas back in their sheaths.
Right. So no, but I mean, how about you, Zane? Any other genres outside of
the kitchen? I can't really think of anything.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. Now, pivoting on to kind of a different subject here, where are you guys drawing the inspiration for your adventures? Like what are the primary sources where you guys like will see something and go, that needs to end up in my D&D game? You know, what are you pulling from as far as that goes?
A lot of stuff I pull from is mostly like games I play where I'll see something cool and be like, I want that in a TTRPG.
Yeah, it's a lot of times I really like dark fantasy stuff. So in my campaigns, I'll pull some stuff from things like Dragon's Dogma or Dark Souls.
Mm-hmm.
Or other examples.
Monster Hunter.
Monster Hunter is in dark fantasy.
Oh, bring the camera. There's going to be a fight afterwards.
Here we go.
Noah, have you read Berserk yet?
Yes, I really like Berserk. I base a lot of my...
so much, yeah.
A lot of it, my stuff off Berserk because it's super... I just really like it.
Oh, speak of the devil, Victor's here.
Yep, Victor is here. Victor, we were just selling your books to these fine gentlemen.
I actually got introduced to it because of Dark Souls. He is Dark Souls based off of Berserk. Hmm. Yeah, I base a lot of stuff my campaigns off Berserk.
So, yeah. Big Berserk fans.
Yeah.
Hmm. Awesome. That's good to hear. Sometimes I worry that the Berserk fandom will die in darkness because there hasn't been a good anime in years. There hasn't been any anime in a long time.
Listen, okay, as long as it isn't another 8 years on a boat, Berserk should be doing fine.
Yeah. But that's just, I'm glad that Berserk is living on. It makes me very happy. I love Berserk. So, but no, have there been any instances of, you know, like TV shows that you have watched that have inspired your games at all?
I don't watch a lot of TV, but I know Derek heavily, he takes a lot of inspiration from the Avatar universe. So yeah, like
Derek really likes Avatar. I don't really watch a lot of TV shows either, so I don't really get much stuff from that.
Okay.
Like the only show I've watched in the past, like for the entirety of 2023, I've only really watched JoJo. Okay. And I'm not going to try and derive anything from JoJo into a TTRPG.
That's a smart move. You could end up in some dangerous waters there.
Let's see here. I mean, they're kind of at that position where they're absorbing media, but they're just not, they just don't have the temerity to sit down for a 2-hour movie or anything. It seems.
Oh no, I see like a movie every weekend with my dad.
Oh, with your dad, yeah.
That's like one of the major bonding things we do.
But you know, they're not absorbing a lot of TV shows and whatnot as they used to when they were younger. Like they have zero interest in any. I don't think they've seen a single episode of most of the Star Wars stuff that's been coming out, for good or bad. The Rings of Power stuff, all the things that have been coming out. And mind you, whether your opinion of them is good or bad, but most people might say they may not be missing out on much. You read your books. You're not into comic books. So I think primarily a lot of your inspiration is coming from these little snippets of pop culture that you guys are absorbing, and also the video games, right?
Yeah, have video games been like a big inspiration for you? I know you mentioned Dragon's Dogma early on in the episode.
Yeah, video games have been a big influence on what we've done.
Good.
Noah's major thing is he loves the Souls-like Dark Souls games.
Yeah.
So he'll base a lot of this stuff on it. And as Zane mentioned, his failed attempt to make a Dragon's Dogma.
You don't want to know the half of it.
You're right, I don't.
What was it that you stumbled over? Was it the idea of like climbing monsters? Was that the thing?
No, I didn't include, like, I have a Google Doc with everything, but
he had trouble before he even got to the climbing part.
No, okay, so here's the thing. In the original thing I had, it involved me going in depth between like all the stats and how you level them up and stuff, but then I simplified it a lot to make it easier, and I just changed it down to like strength, willpower, magic, and dex, I want to say. That's right.
You tried to power?
Oh, that's right. Power. That was a bad idea. That was
that did not work at all.
No bueno. I added too much. Like I tried adding too much scaling stuff, and it was just like Matchbox Tower, and then session one it collapsed on itself.
Here's a good question for you guys. Now with Scott as your dad, Noah, I'm sure the answer to this is somewhat yes, but have you guys read anything from what role players call Appendix N?
Never heard of it.
I haven't heard it.
All right. So Appendix N was included in the original release of Dungeons and Dragons. And it was basically Gary Gygax saying, these are all the fictional works that inspired this game. And it includes stuff like the Conan the Barbarian stories, which I'm obviously a huge fan of. It includes a book called Three Hearts and Three Lions by Paul Anderson. It includes Fofford and the Grey Mouser, which is about two thieves in a fictional medieval city called Lankmar. One of them's a big red-haired barbarian. The other one's a skinny thief-like guy, and they just go on various misadventures as criminals, essentially. So there's lots of cool stuff. There's also Dying Earth by Jack Vance, which if I don't mention that, someone's going to like throw stones at me. So
Ion Stones.
Yes, Ion Stones. But it's a great resource of kind of the almost like the cave paintings of role-playing games. You go back and you read a lot of this stuff from the 20s and 30s and 40s all the way up through the 60s and 70s once you get into the Elric books, and you see concepts that have carried over into modern D&D. So if you guys have the inclination or get the chance, I do recommend you look up Appendix N and see all the books that are on there and just kind of go through them and you know, pick a few favorites to start with.
All right.
Yeah, no, it's I know at one point in time I grabbed a couple books when Noah was a little bit younger. And I know he's read maybe one of the Conan stories. I gave you the Conan book at one point in time. I mean, he's delved into Tolkien, which was he on the original Appendix N, or was he on the revised one? I don't remember.
I think he was on the revised.
Okay. But I mean, you got the Silmarillion right in that bookcase over there. No one on camera can see it.
I'm sorry. I have what?
The Silmarillion.
Okay. I thought you said something else. So. But no, I mean, so yeah, little aspects of it. I mean, he's years ago, he read some of the, I've got, you know, a decent collection of all the old TSR books. So he read like the part of the Homeland Saga for Dritz, which is different. It's not Appendix N. It's its own thing. It's still enjoyable at a certain age.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's there, you know, for them to enjoy. But to be fair, when I was younger, was well aware of the Appendix N, but I didn't read hardly any of those books until later in life. Now I read other things. I read, you know, like, you know, the read The Hobbit and all the Tolkien books. I read, you know, the Black Cauldron and Lloyd Alexander, I think it was, and you know, other things rolled into like the Belgariad, which wasn't Appendix N, but it's kind of like later fantasy novels.
Yep.
But knew about them, but didn't actually read them till well later in life. So I mean, it's never too late to go back and pick up some of those books for inspiration because they're fantastic.
One of these days, I'm going to make a millennial Appendix N just so people will make fun of it. Just be like, why is Aragorn on here? Because that's the first fantasy book I read.
Oh, I mean, these boys' Appendix N is just going to be a list of various video games, I think. So
that's and Berserk.
Like, yeah. Oh, and Berserk, yes. Mm-hmm.
Berserk would definitely be on Millennial Appendix N.
Right.
Now, as we're kind of, you know, running out of our time here, I do want to ask you guys about one thing, and that is conventions. Have you been to any conventions? And, you know, are you looking to continue going to conventions? Because I find that's one of the best places to get introduced to new RPGs.
Yeah. Like just in February, we went to Strategicon, and there I found a new game. I don't really remember its, you know, its actual name. So
Vikings in Spaces.
The Vikings in Space one.
Yeah.
It was a really interesting way to play the game because it was card based, mm-hmm. and I had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, last July, we went to Gen Con, and that was really fun because I didn't really play a lot of games there. I played two, mm-hmm. but getting to walk around and see pretty much everything was really cool because everything was there, and I got a book signed by Johan Noor.
Sweet.
We try to go to Strategicon, which is pretty much the only convention option you have in Southern California, but it happens three times a year. Try to go once a year. We've been going at least once a year for the past 4 or 5 years now. Mm-hmm. In the beginning, it was strictly they wanted to play
5e
Adventurers League.
And then we realized that's boring. So we started playing stuff on the top floor instead of the basement. And suddenly it was a lot more entertaining.
But you guys, gotcha. you guys discovered some new games there, right?
Yeah.
What was the one last year? Didn't you guys, there was one that you guys played for the first time, I think. I don't recall.
I don't remember what it was.
Oh. I'm trying to think of games I've played in
Strategy. But yeah, it's a good opportunity, you know, where they, as they've gotten older, and I don't have, I mean, I'm comfortable not having, being at the table with them. They can be at a table. I'm playing another game. You know, they're more open to, this just looks cool, going to go check it out.
Hmm.
But oh yeah, that's right. And also they hate werewolf, which is a con standard, come to find out, but it's definitely a different thing. Nothing against it, but yeah, it's a different, you gotta be prepared for that.
Yeah.
Well, no, the one time I went to the werewolf, it was actually kind of fun. It was really interesting, the people we were with.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was like us in Chesney, and then there was like this family, and the dad brought like chickpeas. I had some. I was hungry. It was like 11 at night, man.
Now, is this Werewolf the Apocalypse? Like, was this a werewolf LARP?
Oh, no. It's a particular, I forget what it's built
on. One Night Werewolf like, Ultimate.
Mafia? Yeah, it's
basically. Oh, yeah, the card game. Mafia. I gotcha. Yeah,
so you're kind of guessing who the werewolf is. People close their eyes, and you accuse each other and play out the accusations, so you find the werewolf.
One major thing I remember from the werewolf night was when Noah killed me. He wasn't a werewolf, but he killed me.
Yeah.
I said he had killed me, and he killed me, and no one believed me.
Oh, and in case your mom's watching, saying I was there with them at midnight. They were not there playing werewolf alone.
Oh, she got accustomed to me staying up to like 3 a.m. daily, so she was used to me being up late.
You're fine. Mm-hmm.
You were still at the con, so it was fine.
Technically.
Oh, yeah, no, because that was the time we were at the Hilton, so.
Yeah, so it wasn't there.
Okay, we're
off track.
We're sidebarring again.
Yes. Sidebarring.
Woo! Next time, like, one, I think you guys should at some point make the trek out to Dallas for North Texas RPG Convention. Because one, I go there every year, and it's a ton of fun. But two, if you want to play old school D&D, with the people, a lot of times, who wrote it, that's the place to do it.
And it's a lot closer than Indianapolis.
Yes, it is. Dallas is a lot closer for you guys than Indianapolis. And while you're there, I would also introduce you guys to Ben Barsh. Mm-hmm. His dad is Bill Barsh. They run Paysetter Games together. Ben is about 3 years younger than I am. But he also, like you, Noah, grew up with a gamer dad, was introduced to role-playing very early on, and is also someone who is helping to make role-playing games last into the future. So I think you guys would get along with him, and I think it'd be great to see you guys interact with him.
Yeah. How do we convince mommy to go, though? We'll figure it out. You're the smart one.
I'm working on site in Dallas, Texas for 2 weeks specifically in whenever the month is.
Oh, wait, never mind. You guys can you'll be driving in a few months. So there you go.
Drive out to Dallas.
Oh, yeah. Matt's been asking that for a while.
What's that?
Oh, we think of where D&D's going.
Yep.
Okay.
I don't like it.
I'm not a big fan of one D&D, but like, I'm not going to go out and like, you know, yell at someone if they enjoy it. It's not my style. Just watching D&D isn't really my style anymore, but I have no qualms with the people who do enjoy it.
Yeah, I don't like the one D&D thing and the unnecessary changes. Because 5e where it was just fine. It didn't need an entire new edition yet.
I mean, but you were happy when the Dragonborn got Dark Vision.
Yeah, that's one of the only changes I like, is Dragonborn getting Dark Vision.
But you could have made that change yourself.
He likes Dragonborn.
But what about, like, you know, the other aspects? So for example, I mean, just kind of, sorry to backtrack.
A lot of it just seems like dumbed down.
Right.
Like, even more so than 5e. How do you dumb down 5e?
That's a feat.
So,
not like you're getting any.
So, Ryan, real quick, just to kind of tack onto this, because Matt asked that question earlier. So the D&D Direct today, it was a 30-minute stream. I didn't watch it through. I just kind of zipped through it. But its primary was more focused on the aspects of the brand. The first thing they announced was D&D Minecraft. Essentially, it's just Minecraft with a bunch of Forgotten Realms skins. The next thing that they were proposing was the new edition of Menzo Barazhan to the online D&D game.
Menzo Barazhan online D&D game?
Neverwinter. If I'm not mistaken, then they focused on the virtual tabletop. Then it was a lot of the new toys. And then finally, I think at the very end, and Matt can correct me if I'm wrong, they did touch a little bit on one D&D within like in the last 3 minutes of it. Yeah. So, I mean, what are your impressions on that's kind of the direction where it seems to be going. It's more they want your money. And if they can't get it through one D&D, they want to market the whole brand to you guys.
Yeah, it just seems like bland and soulless.
I don't like the commercialization and the monetization that WotC, like the route they're taking for D&D. I think it's stupid. And like, instead of monetizing it by, you know, like selling out and making toys and, you know, doing Hasbro stuff, they should be instead doing D&D things like selling modules and books and actually things that help the game instead of a cloak.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But a blue one.
Yeah, blue cloak.
Yeah, it's blue.
Who needs a blue cloak? I have a black and gray cloak right here.
But is it midnight black? Because if it's not, you can have midnight black for an additional $4.99.
Oh,
but yeah, like what Noah said, at this point, D&D feels less like D&D and more just like soulless fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's just generic fantasy. It doesn't have any D&D specialties anymore. And it's just the soulless face of WotC.
Yeah. I can't say I disagree with you guys. I mean,
and yeah, I do play it more on Hasbro because Hasbro is, you know, it's a corporation, so it's not going to be great, but
yeah, they're.
I blame Hasbro a lot more than I blame WotC.
Mm-hmm. Well, at this point, WotC, there's almost no separation there. WotC is an appendage of Hasbro. They don't control themselves anymore. They are controlled.
Yeah, so, and that's why I really don't blame WotC anymore. Because it's all because of Hasbro. They control everything.
Yeah. Now, we are at time for this evening. I've really enjoyed this conversation. If at any point you guys want to come back on, let me know and we'll do this again, because I've really enjoyed talking with you guys and I feel like there's a lot more that we could talk about. But before I let you go,
your secret question.
Yes, my secret question.
Waiting on it.
The answer to this question can be as philosophical or as sophomoric as you want it to be. So Noah and Zane, if you could put anything on a t-shirt, what would it be?
Anything on a t-shirt.
Anything on a t-shirt.
Another picture of a t-shirt with a fake PNG behind it.
That sounds like something I'd see on Luca International. Okay.
That's better than my answer.
What was your answer, Sky?
I don't even remember. I think it was just something like, I don't know, OSC. I forget.
thinking. See, I need a shirt that reflects my personality. I need a vibrant neon pink shirt that says I'm, you know, 4'2". stealing that idea blatantly from Luca International and their I'm 5'4" shirt, you know, sue me. Mm-hmm. I bought your Michigan hoodie. I love it.
Is this another?
No. You're giving appropriate credit for what's due.
All right. Well, it's been great talking to you guys. And speaking of t-shirts, I do want to remind everyone here, if I can shill my own stuff here for just a second. The Bonehead Emporium is live on TeePublic. I will drop the link here in chat for everyone. This is where you can get your official Rollin' Bones t-shirts. I've got three designs here. We have the Bonehead design where you can identify yourself as a bonehead because you spend precious time watching the show. You can also identify yourself as an RP gorilla if that is your thing. Our nice unit patch t-shirt here and the tried and true classic, just my logo and text right there, the Rollin' Bones main logo t-shirt. That is what we have available on the Bonehead Emporium. More designs will be coming at some point as I think of them. But if you're looking for a Rollin' Bones t-shirt, you can find it over on TeePublic.
See, I want to change my answer for my shirt. Instead of saying I want to say Zane is 4'2".
Is this an announcement?
Yes, it's just an announcement. It's not I'm, it's Zane. Zane's the only Zane.
Doesn't matter who's wearing the shirt.
Zane.
Guys, he stopped recording 30 seconds ago.
No, we're still on. All right, well, again, thank you guys for coming on. This has been a great conversation. I'm glad that, you know, you guys are enjoying this hobby as much as everyone who has played it before you has. And, you know, I just hope you guys continue to play even, you know, after you leave high school, after you move on to other things. I hope this stays a part of what you do with the rest of your life. So, you know,
it most definitely will. Yeah. D&D has formed some of the best relationships I've had in my life. So yeah, it's not going anywhere in mine.
Nice. All right. Well, guys, April is shaping up to be a banger of a month as far as Rollin' Bones episodes go. And this will kick off next week on the 4th when, for the first time ever, Jay Shields, the artist behind several of your favorite OSR games, is joining me here on Rollin' Bones. I played in one of the Star Wars games. He is a great dude. Also, later on in the month of April, Alex McCreese will be coming back for his third appearance on Rollin' Bones to talk about simulationism, and Servant of Shiloh will be coming on to talk about superhero games. So those are three banger episodes that I am looking forward to. We'll have more in there as well because there are more than 3 weeks in the month of April. But until then, whether you rolled a 1 or a 20, I am so glad that you rolled your bones with me, Ryan Howard, and I will see you guys next time.